from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump had decisive wins yesterday in New York just when they needed them. Here was Clinton last night, delighted by her victory.
Today, you proved once again there's no place like home.
And Donald Trump just about ready to say he's got the nomination sewn up.
We don't have much of a race anymore based on what I'm seeing on television. Senator Cruz is just about mathematically eliminated.
But it's not that simple. This hour on Point, America's choices after New York. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you see in the New York results? Sanders people, Cruz people, what now? Where is this race going? Joining me now from Washington, Molly Ball, staff writer covering national politics in the 2016 campaign for The Atlantic. You can link to her celebrated reporting at our website, onpointradio.org. Molly, thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Great to be here.
Glad you made it through the traffic, and happy birthday, Molly.
Thank you very much.
And with us from Washington, Laura Meckler, national politics reporter for The Wall Street Journal, her reporting also at our website. She is all over this campaign. Laura Meckler, so happy to have you with us today.
Great to be here, Tom.
It's great to have you. All right, Molly, you're covering mainly Republicans. Donald Trump says, wants to say he's got it sewn up. I mean, I am reading everywhere. Laura reports as well that New York's drubbing of Ted Cruz means he cannot get to 1237. Is there a lock on anything here on the GOP side?
No, and I do cover both sides of the race, but I do think that the New York primary did not actually change the game numerically in a meaningful way. The Republicans are still locked in a stalemate. It is still difficult but not impossible for Trump to get to 1,237 delegates before the convention, and virtually impossible for Ted Cruz to get there before the convention. Therefore, the contested convention remains the likeliest scenario. That was true before New York. It's true after New York. But it is a big morale boost for Trump to have won this overwhelmingly. It shows that the faltering that he's experienced for the past few weeks and the wins that Cruz was racking up in other states, that resistance to Trump that was emerging across the country didn't carry over to his home state. And this is a very convincing victory, really exceeding expectations for Trump, which he's going to hope to carry forward into the next few states on the calendar.
I want to be sure I got you right on that. Are you saying Trump has a shot at 1237 before the convention in Cleveland or not?
He has a shot technically, but it's very, very difficult for him to do.
So most likely falling short of that, though he's talking a lot about how he'd like to get it. Laura Meckler, help us look at the Democratic side of the ledger here and the delegate count as we survey the field on the morning after New York's results came in.
Well, I think that this just really makes it clear that Hillary Clinton is going to be the Democratic nominee. Frankly, I think that's really been clear for about the last month. But, you know, Senator Sanders has been talking about still having opportunities in the back half of the calendar. But in order to do that, he had to win big states, and he had to win them big. And, in fact, the opposite happened yesterday. Not only did Hillary Clinton win New York, but she won it decisively by about 16 points. So that, you know, in order for – it's just simple math, frankly, on the Democratic side. You know, in order for Senator Sanders to catch up, he needs needs some big wins. There are only three big states left on the calendar, New Jersey and California, which vote in June, and then Pennsylvania next week. And there just aren't enough opportunities there for him to catch up, even if he were to somehow, you know, vault past her. But, you know, New York was this real showdown between the two of them. They both competed very hard for the state. You know, Clinton didn't take it for granted. Sanders said it was a must win ahead of the contest. And, you know, the result was a decisive Clinton win. And, you know, that I think we're seeing the beginning of the end of the Sanders campaign, truthfully.
We'll see what happens with all that passionate support out there. Here was Hillary Clinton last night, her victory speech in New York.
The race for the Democratic nomination is in the home stretch, and victory is in sight.
And why? Going her way. Here was Hillary Clinton, Secretary Glinton, again last night.
Under the bright lights of New York, we have seen that it's not enough to diagnose problems. You have to explain how you'd actually solve the problems.
Laura Meckler, how do you explain what we just saw here? I mean, you look at a map of Clinton's victory. It's very striking.
Yes.
Huge, solid victories in New York City, Long Island, major cities, Syracuse, Rochester, Buffalo. But the rest of the map of New York, I mean, you've got those big the islands, and that's where the population is. But a lot of rural area, Bernie. How do you explain what just happened here?
Well, I mean, the first thing you have to keep in mind, that the vast majority of the voters are in the New York metro area.
Yeah.
Something like I don't know what it actually turned out to be, but the projections were that it would be like 70% of the vote. So, you know, winning the metro area is not a small thing.
No.
That said, you know, Bernie Sanders does have a lot of support. He has a substantial amount of support. The exit polls showed that they divided the white vote. In general, he has in a lot of states won the white vote. She does much better with racial minorities and, in fact, did very well, again, with African-Americans and Latino voters last night. Bernie Sanders' strength in the rural areas is built on that support from white voters. And there's no question that he has a following. He has a passionate following. But, you know, an interesting thing about that clip that you just played from Secretary Clinton is that, you know, that was a little swipe at Sanders when he said that, you know, you can't just diagnose the problem. But that was the only reference she made to Sanders in her entire speech. The rest was all forward-looking. I think we're beginning to see her start to pivot towards the general election. I think the question now is, what does he do?
Here's a little sound of that last night, reaching out, Hillary Clinton.
And to all the people who supported Senator Sanders, I believe there is much more that unites us than divides us.
Hillary Clinton reaching out to Bernie Sanders supporters last night. Molly Ball, how do you speak to this substantial 16-point Clinton victory in New York? Minorities heavily for her, urban areas heavily for her. And yet, with the passion we saw it at huge rallies in the city and the map beyond. Very Sanders-colored this morning. How do you look at the Democratic race there and the result, Molly?
Well, along the lines of what Laura was saying, Hillary Clinton got her voters out in this primary. There were a lot of passionate Sanders supporters. We saw him having those huge rallies in New York City. And although, as you point out, the places where he actually won were those upstate areas, there's clearly a large population of sort of young urban liberals in New York City. And they are very passionate about Bernie Sanders. There just aren't as many of them as there are of Hillary Clinton's voters. And she got them out. You know, we've talked a lot in this campaign about the lack of enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton. New York is a state where she really did get people to be enthusiastic about her. And not for nothing, this is a closed Democratic primary. If you wanted to vote in this primary, you had to register back in the fall as a Democrat. Sanders has done better in states where independents can vote in the primary. And I think a lot of Sanders supporters might have woken up in January or February to his message and found that they were not able to vote in the New York City Democratic primary. So, you know, there's a very powerful and active Democratic establishment, maybe even a Democratic machine in New York. They were for Hillary, and they got those votes out for her.
Bernie Sanders, back in Vermont to recharge, spoke here yesterday about the outcome.
I congratulate Secretary Clinton on her victory. Next week, we will be competing in Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Maryland, and Delaware. And we look forward to winning a number of those states. We believe we have the momentum, and we believe we have a path toward victory.
Bernie Sanders. Laura, Molly, callers for you. Anne in Torrington, Connecticut. Anne, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, and I'd like my answer on air. I'll hang up the phone.
Okay.
I don't understand why there's 3 million people that weren't allowed to vote. I was watching, listening to Bernie Sanders on Facebook on his site, and
you're talking about independents. People. This was a closed primary. Independents could not just swing in and vote, and Bernie was talking about that.
All right.
Tom, I may be able to help clarify.
Yes, please.
A little bit.
Yeah, please.
I think there were a couple different issues here. One was that independents were not able to vote, and that was no small thing, as Molly noted, because they, he has much stronger support from independents. There were also some allegations of voter irregularities that people who thought they had changed their registration, it wasn't showing up on the rolls. I don't know that that was 3 million people, but there were some concerns about that, and that was something that Sanders supporters were raising yesterday.
And it's in the news right now, Laura, that something like 120,000 voters dropped from voting rolls just in Brooklyn since November.
Right. Exactly. So that was one of the concerns. But I think the 3 million number that Senator Sanders was referring to had to do with the independent voters. And it was actually funny. Yesterday, Senator Sanders and his wife, Jane, took a walk through Manhattan, and they ran into a supporter who you know, said hi to him and said, he said, "Are you voting?" He said, "Well, I'm an independent. I couldn't vote for you." And Senator Sanders said, "You know, right here, this is the problem." And he pointed to this man. But, you know, the rules are what they are, and they were set. And, you know, New York does not have particularly, has very tight voting rules on a variety of things. So they're not particularly voter friendly, and this is one example of it.
Molly, there's been so much talk about what's legit and rules, but were the New York victories within a margin that would have been changed with a different setup yesterday?
Well, that's a good point, because both of the frontrunners won such convincing victories that it's really hard to argue that you would have seen a different result with a different structure of the contest. And of course, you know, you complain about the rules when you're disadvantaged by them, when they're causing you to lose, or when you are losing and you need something to blame that isn't yourself. But, you know, I think it's very clear from the results of this primary that Donald Trump is the favorite of Republican voters in New York and Hillary Clinton is the favorite of Democratic voters. It's hard to see that changing. And as Laura said, the rules were set far in advance, and the rules have advantaged Bernie Sanders in other places where he's done very well in states that have held caucuses. That's a process that has been called undemocratic based on the way that those contests work. So, you know, when you start to lose, you blame the referee or you blame the rules. But this seems to me a pretty clear-cut case.
It's not beanbag out there. It's tough. And the rules get wielded one way or another. We're talking today about the Trump and Clinton victories in New York and the way ahead for them. Bernie Sanders, Ted Cruz, John Kasich, the way ahead for this presidential race. How do you see what's unfolding here? What would you say to your guys' team? What's the battle of messages, of visions that is shaping up here with the Trump and Clinton victories in New York? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. I want to hear more from Trump and Ted Cruz in just a moment, but calls on this Democratic race. Alan in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Alan, you're on the air.
Yes. How are you, Tom?
Okay. What do you see?
The way I see this is Trump has us not locked up completely 100%. Anybody who thinks he's not going to be a nominee is dreaming, and saying it's a stalemate with Ted Cruz is complete fiction. Bernie Sanders is the only candidate that could beat Trump. And he has a mathematical possibility of still winning this, whereas Cruz does not. And Trump is running a populist, working class message in many ways, talking about trade issues, which is Bernie Sanders' playbook. And the only way he can be beaten is with Bernie Sanders. And Hillary will get eaten alive by Donald Trump. I think the mistake by the establishment to steer this to Hillary Clinton called Bernie Sanders down and out.
Alan, we've got it. Let me put it to my guests. Molly, I'll come first to you. We did hear Bernie Sanders citing polls on the trail as he campaigned in New York, saying, "I'm the one, the polls show it, who can go head-to-head with Trump and win," suggesting that Hillary Clinton would have trouble with that, as does our caller. What about it, Molly?
Well, you do see these general election head-to-head polls where voters are asked hypothetically who they would support in a Hillary Clinton-Donald Trump or in a Bernie Sanders-Donald Trump mashup, and Bernie Sanders does tend to do better in those. Most Democrats and Republicans, frankly, that I talk to, do not believe that those are accurate because they don't. Because Bernie Sanders is not as well known a quantity as Hillary Clinton. However, Hillary Clinton's negatives are tremendously high. If Trump weren't in this race, we would be talking about how she is negatively viewed. She's got the American record for unfavorable ratings in a presidential election. So she's going to have to overcome some very high negatives that are pretty well baked in. She's got 100% name recognition, as does Donald Trump. Now, most of those general election, almost all those general election matchup polls also do show Hillary Clinton beating Donald Trump. So this idea that Bernie is the only one that can beat Trump, I don't think is substantiated. And I think it's always a mistake to read too much into general election matchups before the primaries have been concluded and before that general election race has been run.
Let's hear a little more from Donald Trump right here. Very significant victory over Ted Cruz. 0 delegates for Cruz, 3 for John Kasich. And here was Donald Trump saying the GOP race just about over.
As you know, we have won millions of more votes than Senator Cruz, millions and millions of more votes than Governor Kasich. We've won, and now, especially after tonight, close to 300 delegates more than Senator Cruz. We're really, really rocking.
And Ted Cruz at a watch party in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, coming right up with his view of what's going on. Interesting. Listen to hear how he talks about also Bernie Sanders.
The people in state after state have made it clear. They cry out for a new path. This is the year of the outsider. I'm an outsider. Bernie Sanders is an outsider. Both with the same diagnosis, but both with very different paths to healing.
Well, that's true. Very different paths to healing. But the big outsider banner, he's ready to stretch it over himself. And Bernie, those who did not win in New York, I want to bring that to you, Molly and Laura, but first from Ann Arbor, Michigan. John's calling. John, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom, very much for taking my comment and my question.
Yes.
You raised a question that I want to answer a little bit. The message on out of New York, from my perspective, is rather depressing. You have two candidates whose negative poll ratings, by all accounts, are significantly in excess of their positive rating.
You're talking Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, okay?
Yes. We need more and better choices, which means we need to open up our political processes to third parties, which is not possible without changing our voting system. My question to you, Tom, and your guest is, why can't your respective very important media outlets pay some attention to the question of, can we change our voting system so it gives us more and better representative results?
John, I appreciate your call, and I'll put it to Molly and Laura. There will be some today as seeing those losses, if they took losses in New York, thinking along these lines, and there's a lot of rumination just exactly down this line. I mean, Laura, take it on. We're running into the way the system works at a time when you want outsiders. On the other hand, there's a big outsider, Donald Trump, about as outside as you can get in some ways, right there in the lead.
Well, I'm just not sure how the system is not producing what people want when people are voting. You know, I think there is a lot of yearning for an outsider, but at the same time, people are being given choices, and we see what's happening. So it feels, in a way, like the system is sort of working the way it's supposed to. I'm not sure what I'm missing here.
Molly?
Yeah, let me jump in on that, too. I mean, in a way, you have two third-party candidates making major waves in this race. Bernie Sanders has never been a Democrat, although he's running in the Democratic Party. And Donald Trump hasn't always been a Republican, and many Republicans view him as not a real Republican. So, you know, both parties, I think, have been significantly disrupted by this contest. Now, you may not like the choices that you're going to end up with in November. I've always felt that ought to be your signal to participate more in the system that we have. But as Laura was saying, if what you wanted were candidates outside our two-party system, you really did get them in this election season in a way that we haven't seen in many years.
You got them, but then, of course, they have to run the gauntlet. And does the gauntlet look fair? That seems to be the implicit suggestion in our Ann Arbor caller's observation. Okay, even if they got in, they can't get through.
But just because you don't win doesn't mean it's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the part I don't quite understand. I mean, it's interesting to me listening to the Bernie Sanders folks, because what they talk about, and this is very true, is the distance that they've come. And they sort of measure their success against how far he's come, which, I mean, he's come from nowhere. He was an asterisk when he entered this race. And he, you know, he's taken her on and shaken the Clinton campaign. And that's a huge achievement. But the actual measure of success in terms of getting the nomination is how far you have to go. And, you know, at this point, it doesn't look like he's going to make it to that.
Donald Trump last night putting up warning flares for his supporters on that front, still worried about the establishment Republican Party coming after him at the convention, probably contested in Cleveland. Here was Donald Trump.
Nobody should be given delegates, which is a ticket to victory, and it's not a fair ticket. And even though we're leading by a lot and we can't be caught, it's impossible to catch us. Nobody should take delegates and claim victory unless they get those delegates with voters and voting. And that's what's going to happen. And you watch, because the people aren't going to stand for it.
Molly, let's go once again to Cleveland and what we may see there. I mean, we've got a lot more voting before then, but as you and Laura say, it's still tough for Donald to wrap up that 1,237 votes, a contested convention, an open convention, perhaps quite likely. What does that look like?
Nobody knows. I'm not going to pretend to be able to envision what that looks like. This has not happened in the modern primary era. It is not something that the Republican Party had planned for, and they are sort of scrambling right now to figure out how to put the convention together, because this is a time when they would expect to have a presumptive nominee who'd wrapped up the nomination and everyone else had dropped out, and the party was starting – party members who supported other candidates are starting to lick their wounds and come around mm-hmm. to the nominee, and everybody's starting to coalesce. Obviously, that's not happening. And over the past few weeks, it has actually seemed like the party was splintering further. The big question, I think, out of this New York primary is – does it finally give Trump some momentum? What we've seen in the past, the sticking point for him is even when he wins big, he doesn't get any momentum out of it. It doesn't raise the ceiling on his vote among populations that are resistant to him, whether it's hardcore conservatives or more liberal Republicans or more rank and file Republicans, party loyalists. He has still been regarded with horror by a large block of the party he's seeking to lead. Does this change that? Do people look at that speech last night in which he struck a sort of different tone and say, maybe I can live with this? Maybe if the price is, you know, chaos at the convention, I can learn to love Donald Trump. What I think it's going to be very interesting to watch whether some of that resistance to Trump starts to lessen in the next few weeks, or whether it digs in, and whether Cruz can continue doing what Trump was referring to in that clip, this tactical work that he's been so good at, that he's really owned over the last few weeks, of picking up delegates here and there in these state party processes.
Can we take it back to actual messages? Policy, if you like, though promises and story might describe better what's going on in competition right now. I mean, Laura, when you look at the Democrats, for a moment, let's leave rules aside and just look at what they're saying and how it's playing. You've got loyalties, perhaps, among different populations, but what about the actual message from Hillary Clinton versus that from Bernie Sanders on the stump, and what the vote's outcome says about what people are hearing, what they're wanting?
Well, I mean, I think that Clinton and Sanders are presenting people with a very clear choice. I mean, they share a lot of values. There's a lot, as Clinton said, that unites them, but they have a very different approach. He is calling for a political revolution. He wants a lot of very big ideas that, single-payer health care, a huge plan for free tuition at public colleges, breaking up all of the banks. I mean, he has a lot of big ideas. And, you know, her policies tend to be A, more modest, B, more refined, and C, more politically pragmatic. And that's how she approaches policymaking. And as she looks at sort of what's doable, how to advance the ball, a very sort of tactical way of working the system. You know, she works within the system. He's talking about blowing up the system. So those are very different approaches. But, Clinton has taken to saying, and she said it last, she said in the clip that you played, you know, you can't just diagnose the problem, you have to have a solution. And what he says is you can't just accept the way things are. He said this last night, he said, too many people just accept the way things are. We're not going to do that, and that's why we're going to win. We're challenging the way things are. So there is a very different approach between them, and those differences have become crystal clear over the course of this campaign. So I think Democratic voters have a very real choice that they can make.
And I wonder, Molly, what's going to happen to that yearning for the bigger change? Running up to this vote, Bernie Sanders had huge crowds that came out for him. Just listen to the sound. I mean, he gets it wrong here in his prediction, but listen to the sound of the support. This was in Washington Square Park last Wednesday in New York City.
We have won 7 out of the last 8 caucuses and primaries. And when I look at an unbelievable crowd like this, I believe we're going to win here in New York next Tuesday.
Well, they didn't, but listen to that crowd. John in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. What do you see, John? You're on the air.
I don't doubt that a huge number of the people in that audience for Bernie Sanders probably couldn't vote for him owing to the rules in New York, just like Trump's kids couldn't vote for him because mm-hmm. they didn't get their registrations over in time. The reality is Hillary Clinton draws and does very well with Democrats, but I don't believe she can draw outside of the party well enough to be competitive against another outsider. So if Donald Trump gets the nomination, that poses a huge problem for her. And the only way she's going to be able to battle back is if she can beat him in the debates.
Molly Ball, take it on. If this is what it's going to be, we don't know yet, but if it should be, what does that look like, the texture of Trump versus Clinton?
Well, as I said before, all of the hypothetical matchups have shown that Clinton would beat Trump in a general election, almost all of them. But I don't think anyone should take anything for granted. A lot of implausible things have already happened in this election, and I think many more implausible things are still to come, many surprises. What we have seen about Donald Trump is that he is very good at taking out his rivals. He's very good at insulting them in a way that sort of gets to the core of what people don't like about them, whether it's, you know, Lion Ted Cruz or little mm-hmm. Marco Rubio. Mm-hmm. He started calling Clinton crooked Hillary Clinton. And so he tends to make those attacks stick in a very personal way. He doesn't respect a lot of the boundaries that other candidates respect, whether they are boundaries of decorum or boundaries of fact. And so he's a real wild card, and I think that's what the caller is getting at. Now, the lack of enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton, the Clinton campaign believes the cure for that is Donald Trump, because while he does mobilize a lot of people who haven't voted before or haven't been in the political system before, he also mobilizes a whole lot of people against him. There are a whole lot of people, particularly people of color, minority voters, who will come out to vote just to vote against Donald Trump. And that is a big part of what the Clinton campaign is counting on.
He is rapidly trying to sort of reposition himself as more presidential. There's been a shakeup in his campaign since Wisconsin. He's got this new heavyweight in there, Paul Manafort, people talk about a lot. What's the net effect of that, Molly?
Well, I think it remains to be seen. We did see over the past week or so that Trump was sounding more subdued in his rallies. We didn't see him sort of yelling and screaming and encouraging people to beat each other up the way he has in the past. He read from notes in the speech last night. He was very focused on his core message. Well, two core messages, I would say. One about the process and sort of warning that he sees it as rigged. And two, about the economy and about jobs. Not about, you know, his winery or his steaks or some other issue, that all these distractions that he tends to glom onto. I don't think that's only Paul Manafort's influence. I think his family also has and other people around him mm-hmm. And Trump himself have perceived the problems he was having. But it is partly the influence of this new consultant. And if Trump can keep that up, what we've seen in the past is, I think multiple times people have said, oh, this is a turning point for Trump. He's pivoting. He's going to seem more presidential. And then the next day he does something
cuts
nutty.
Loose.
So,
mm-hmm.
So I would never want to project how Trump is going to be tomorrow based on how he is today, because we've seen he's very unpredictable and very impulsive. If this discipline sticks, the other question I have is whether that erodes some of the support of the people who like how spontaneous he is, the people who like that he's not programmed by mm-hmm. Washington consultants. So I think this all remains to be seen in terms of how Trump behaves in the coming days.
We've got a lot more to look at here. More big votes coming up. A lot of people thinking about exactly what it would sound like, feel like, the competition, the contest of visions, if it were Trump versus Clinton. Molly Ball with The Atlantic, Laura Mechler with The Wall Street Journal. Please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking about the Trump and Clinton victories in New York and the way ahead for them. Bernie Sanders, Ted Cruz, John Kasich, the way ahead for this 2016 race. Molly Ball is with us, covers national politics in the 2016 campaign for The Atlantic. Laura Mechler is here, national politics reporter for The Wall Street Journal. They are both right in the thick of it. Sanders supporters, Cruz supporters, Trump, Clinton, Kasich, what do you see coming? Here were Hillary Clinton supporters chanting Tuesday night in New York, celebrating victory.
Hillary,
and a pretty substantial victory at that. Bernie Sanders, talked to the Associated Press from University Park, Pennsylvania, looking ahead to the next round coming right up.
There are other very important states coming, including Pennsylvania, where we think we have an excellent chance to win. We're going to be heading out west, where we're quite strong, in California, and in Oregon, where I think we can pick up a whole lot of delegates. So I think we do have a path toward victory.
And last night in New York, Donald Trump, optimistic about his prospects in the primaries coming up.
When you look at Pennsylvania, when you look at Indiana, when you look at Maryland and Rhode Island and so many places, we have problems everywhere you look. We are going to solve those problems. And one of the big problems is the economy and jobs, and that is my wheelhouse.
Donald's wheelhouse, we'll look at that. Molly, Laura, a lot of people commenting online and still hung up on the rules here, the vote, the fact that independent voters couldn't get into this closed primary in Vermont. Josh says independent citizens pay taxes but don't get a vote. Closed primaries are wrong in a country that calls itself free. And Alan, looking at the numbers here, says, wait a minute, Sanders lost by something like 300,000. 3 million independent voters wouldn't change things. You got to be joking. We can't really be sure that it wouldn't have been different with 3 million, if that's what the number is, independent voters in there, can we? Molly, Laura?
Well, I mean...
No, of course not.
First of all, you can't assume necessarily that all of those people would have necessarily voted...
Doesn't take all.
All of those people would have voted for Sanders. Mm-hmm. But I think the point Molly makes is the one that's most relevant here. She made this point earlier that, you know, the rules are what they are, and in other states, the rules have benefited him. So, like, look at the caucus system. In that case, you don't even have a secret ballot.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, you have to go and you have to show up. You have to meet at a certain time. If you can't be there at that time, you can't participate. You have to, declare to your neighbors who you're supporting. So, you know, and those contests draw very small turnouts compared to primaries. So, you know, the thing that we should keep in mind is that these are not elections. In the same way that general elections are elections. These are processes put together by political parties to decide how they want to go about choosing their nominee. And it used to be that, you know, it was just people in the, you know, in the legendary smoke-filled room who made the decision. And now it's more democratic than it used to be. But there are still vestiges of party control. Part of it is that the parties get to set the rules. And part of it is that, you know, the role of superdelegates, for instance. The interesting thing, I think, on the rules piece of this is that it started out in the beginning where Sanders people were saying, oh, these superdelegates, these 500 party leaders who each get a vote based on their position, who overwhelmingly favor Clinton, the Sanders people were very fearful that those people would deliver a victory to Clinton over the will of the voters. Well, now we have a situation where Clinton is leading with the voters, leading with the delegates that voters choose, and now the Sanders campaign is trying to flip superdelegates to make it go the other way, to try to convince superdelegates that he's the stronger candidate, despite the fact that she's won with the voters. So, you know, people make arguments that are, I think, convenient to their point of view and what the outcome they want at any given moment. It doesn't necessarily... You know, they can go either way.
We had Ted Devine, her strategist, right here outlining that strategy weeks ago, and that strategy's still on, maybe the only one, maybe, now. Let's go to New York. Pena, New York. Peter's calling. Peter, you're on the air. What do you see?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
What I'm wondering is, we have a very unpopular front runner on both sides and a very popular or relatively popular competitor on both sides. What might this look like if we end up with a third-party candidate for the general election on both sides, and there is no clear Electoral College winner in November? I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Okay, Peter. Well, we're way out in the hypotheticals here. I mean, very unpopular. Certainly high negatives. That's true for both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. That's indisputable. But can you see things unraveling that far in both directions, Molly?
Well, in pure logistical terms, it's very difficult for independent candidates to get on the ballot at this late date. Some of the states' filing deadlines, every state has a different – it's similar to the party primaries. Every state has a different process for getting on their ballot, and in many cases it is quite Byzantine and quite difficult to do and requires a lot of coordination. So in some of those states, these deadlines have already come and gone, and you cannot get on the ballot in November as an independent or a third-party candidate. Now, there are existing third parties that have ballot access in every state, mm-hmm. Such as the Libertarian Party. Traditionally, these third parties have not done particularly well. The Libertarians hit a high watermark 4 years ago, and they got about a million votes, which is sort of a rounding error in the grand scheme of things. So, to the sort of philosophical point of will you see a mass migration out of the two parties and looking for some alternative? Sure, maybe. But there won't be anyone for them to really vote for just because of these logistical issues.
I wonder where that takes us, Laura. People have talked about how crazy and wild and unexpected and surprising so many steps of this campaign season have been. But you've certainly got a lot of people keyed up in a way that is beyond my recollection. Where do you think all that energy goes? Does it just then conform back into the big rivers, Republican and Democrat, and take the two choices and make your choice? Or do we get some other kind of ferment that goes off in other directions here?
Well, I think that it's possible that the Republicans, the Republican Party seems to be at just almost a breaking point where the traditional coalitions that have held it together are no longer exist. And I think that there's a lot of hard thinking that's going to happen there, especially if they lose in November. And I think that that party is going to have a wrenching conversation about its future. The Democrats, I think it will sort of depend if Hillary is the nominee and if she wins, it'll depend, how she governs and whether she is able to kind of bring along the left. But there's going to be a tension there. There always will be between people who want a much more liberal approach to governing and people who are more pragmatic and trying to, move towards the middle, which is where Hillary is. Whether that takes I have a hard time, Senator Sanders talks about a political revolution and it be going beyond him. There has been some sign of him trying to do that by supporting some other candidates for Congress. I sense that the future for them is probably a very strong left-leaning voice inside the party, typified by Senator Sanders, also by Elizabeth Warren, and that those guys and their supporters will continue to put heat on other Democrats to keep them from moving too far to the center or to the right.
Maybe that's what it will be. Here's a listener online saying, a Trump-Clinton matchup is going to be depressing for large swaths of the country. The 1850s all over again, a lack of effective leadership as we drift toward crisis. Well, maybe, or maybe after the heat of the campaign season, other things change. Gabe in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Gabe, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, so, the message I've taken out of New York is kind of one that's sort of been floating around for a while. I haven't been able to wrap my head around, but I think after last night, I'm pretty clear on it. And, I love Bernie Sanders' message. I like the candidate. But I think at its core, where his supporters are coming from, and I don't mean any offense, but it's a position of selfishness. It's a position of privilege. And specifically, it's a position of white privilege.
Explain that. What do you mean? Sanders supporters carrying all that freight? Why? How? What?
Yeah, well, I mean, and this, I remember, Nader and sort of, the effect that had. But what I mean, specifically is that, the ideas are great. I'd love some of that stuff to be able to happen. But how is it going to happen? Do you really think he's going to be able to beat Trump? I don't. I think it's a pretty conservative country overall. Do you think if he did somehow manage to beat Trump that he would have the skills and the support in Congress necessary to do all the things that need to get done? Because the stakes, Tom, are extremely high.
Mm-hmm.
The stakes are really high. And, other people in this country, minorities, who have to deal with the reality of these stakes on a daily basis, understand that, hey, we may not be getting everything we want with Clinton, but it's a heck of a lot better than the other guys. And you got to be smart about this because, it's not just your ideals. It's about the whole country. It's really about the whole world. Nader helped get Bush in office.
Yep. Gabe, I think we've got it. And I appreciate your observation very much. I mean, Molly, do you think we've seen Hillary Clinton's stump speeches, her language, her ideas shift as the challenge from Bernie Sanders grew more real, just took on heft. Do you think that would mean a different kind of Clinton presidency once she's passed a convention and a November vote if she should win? For that matter, the same thing on the Republican side. If Trump doesn't get 1237, if it's an open convention, there's a back room or I don't know what it will be, and somebody else comes out, how deep the Trump stamp beyond his campaign?
Yeah, well, I want to stick with the Democrats for a minute along the lines of what the caller was saying, because someone whose name I don't think we've mentioned in this broadcast is Barack Obama. Part of the problem for Hillary Clinton is it's always very difficult to run for a third consecutive term for your party. And so, you know, I think by her nature, Hillary Clinton is a sort of status quo candidate, someone who, as Laura says, wants to be pragmatic and chip away at the edges and make incremental progress. And so when you have – and you know – now, Barack Obama is that status quo within the Democratic Party. But we have a Democratic Party that 8 years ago voted for a change candidate, and where large constituencies of the party, particularly young people, do want another change candidate. So the bigger point about both parties is that what we've learned in this primary is that both parties are really ripe for disruption. Both parties have some really serious fault lines, and the Democrats, I don't think, realized that these fault lines were there until Bernie Sanders came along. Certainly, almost nobody in the party establishment would have predicted that Bernie Sanders would have been Hillary Clinton's main opponent, or that he would do as well as he has. So, you know, the Republican Party, I don't think you can even predict that it's going to break apart as a result of this. I think it already has. And whether Trump is or is not the nominee, the party is going to be broken in a fundamental way that is going to have long-term consequences. But the Democratic Party also is seeing what's happening with the rise of a new liberal generation, with the increasing influence of diversity and social change. There is a big conversation to be had within the Democratic Party about what it stands for going forward, whether or not they win.
Let's go to Lexington, Kentucky, and John. John, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. So I live in Kentucky, which is considered by many, just kind of by stigma, kind of that hick state. I wasn't born here. Mm. I was born in Indiana and grew up in California and kind of was a transplant here. And what I'm seeing in Kentucky...
My people came up out of Kentucky, so let's go easy on the hick state business.
Well,
but okay.
Some of the most brilliant people I've met are in Kentucky. I think they're astonishing, and it's really got a bad stigma. I love it here. But my issue is I registered in Frankfurt with no party affiliation, so... Mm-hmm. I really am not in a position to be able to vote necessarily for the candidate I want as a swing voter. And I have family in New York, and I've looked at this situation with Trump kind of bullying his way into the presidency, and I'm saying, okay, I'm not going to vote for this guy. I think he's a propagandist, and I think he's going to use this system. Even last night he's saying, I was watching the television, and look at the results. It looks like I'm going to win. Mm-hmm. And that's really scary because you've got a president that's watching the television to tell us what's going on.
Well, everybody does. So Lyndon Johnson watched a lot of televisions too, but okay.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing, though, in this state, which I really love with some amazing, brilliant minds, is many people who are not Clinton supporters are planning on voting for Clinton, who are swing voters, because they can't stand Trump. They're actually kind of scared of this guy. They see he's unqualified. They know Clinton is qualified and very, very sharp. But Trump is bullying his way to the presidency, and I believe Clinton is sneaking her way to the presidency. And I think what just happened in New York reminds me of Florida and the hanging Chad. You got 3 million voters that want to vote potentially for Sanders. And I think it's the blackouts and all this going on. If they could retroactively open that back up and get those 3 million voters in, I technically in this situation, if I was in New York, I would have voted for Sanders.
Never going to happen, retroactive opening it again. But Laura, fair or just a sign of our bullying and sneaking to the White House?
I do think Trump definitely has a bullying quality about him. I also think that voters have a choice to make as to whether they like that bullying or not. And clearly, a lot of voters seem to like it or like him in spite of it. I do think it'll be a huge problem for him in the general election. I do. But for now, the Republican Party seems to be speaking pretty clearly, and it has been for months, that they like him. On the Democratic side, I think that you can – I'm not going to defend New York's rules, but for the sake of argument, let's look at it from the point of view of the parties. They're saying this is – we're putting up a nominee from the Democratic Party. Who should choose that nominee? Democrats. You want, and we'll open our party to anyone who wants to. You want to join our party? Come join our party. But I'm sure the New York Democrats would say, but you can't just decide at the last minute. You're either with us or you're not. Okay, you want to be a Democrat? Come be a Democrat. And then you can participate, as opposed to, you know, right before the election saying, I think I'd like to be part of this club. You know, now, I'm not saying that that's the best way to run an election, but I think you can make a case for it. So I certainly, and I'll repeat the same thing that both Molly and I have said. I don't think it's sneaking. These are the rules. They benefit one candidate in some states. They benefit another candidate in other states. And the truth of the matter is that even with a win in New York, unless he had won an overwhelming victory, if Sanders would have somehow pulled out a narrow win, she still would have had an unovercomable delegate advantage. She's built up this lead. I mean, I think, you know, the other piece that Sanders himself has sought to sort of diminish is the lead, where she built the lead up, which was in the South, based on her strength with African-American voters. I don't think that a lot of Democrats want to say that, you know, none of that counts.
I don't know where it's all going to go, but I have to say it is really interesting to see Americans wake up and really pay attention to the details. I think that's a sign of health in a democracy. Let's hope so, because people are really all over the details and the rules and the whole picture of what's going on, even as we see these two big victories emerging out of New York. I want to thank the two of you so much for being with us today. Laura Meckler at the Wall Street Journal, always great to have you, Laura. You're terrific. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Molly Ball at the Atlantic, same to you. Thanks so much, Molly.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.